Neighbors? Wow, okay, that sounded way too Wyoming for me. But we are hosting the largest outdoor rodeo where I am this week. July is a big month for the capital city, with Frontier Days and the state's birthday. July is also, however, Disability Awareness Month. So my interview is with a high school friend who is not a twin mom, and I'm sure I could have found a twin mom who has a child with a disability, but Kendra is passionate and positive, and I thought she'd be perfect guest to give us insights on what it is like to parent a child with a disability. And disclaimer, we are not clinicians. This is strictly an information episode.
Hi, I'm Amber. I have 5 young kids, including a set of boy-girl twins. My kids were all born within 6.5 years of each other. It's a lot of kids in a little amount of time. It has been quite the journey parenting all these kids so close in age. I've learned a lot over the years, and people often come to me for advice. But let's be honest, I don't know everything. And in those cases, I turn to other moms for their advice. I believe that people living it and doing it are the real experts. So that's why each week, I'll sit down with a real expert, one of my friends, a mom like you, to get all the advice you asked for, and some you didn't. This is Neighborhood Twin Mom. Welcome to the neighborhood. So today I am interviewing my friend Kendra. She and I grew up, we went to high school together. We would go to dances together on the weekends, and she's actually one of my very best friends, younger sisters. And today, this will be my first mom who is not a twin mom, but I felt very compelled to have her on the podcast because July is Disability Awareness Month and she has a child with a disability. And I have learned so much from her, messages, and she's taught me a ton on how to talk to my kids about disabilities. And I want to share her story with all of you. So Kendra, will you start by just introducing your family a little bit?
Yeah, so I am a stay-at-home mom to 3 boys. So my oldest son is Ben, who has Angelman syndrome. And then my second son is almost 6 years old, and I have an 18-month-old.
But you're a new stay-at-home mom, right?
Yes, I've wanted to be a stay-at-home mom forever, and I've been a working mom up until 2 years ago when my husband finally graduated grad school, got his computer engineering master's degree, and got a job doing that. And so now I get to be at home.
Okay. And your oldest son has Angelman syndrome. So tell us what it was like before he was diagnosed. How did you get that diagnosis? What set off in motion the diagnosis?
So it was what felt like a really long road. I know other people have had longer roads, but for us, it was, you know, when he was a baby, a lot of kids don't meet any milestones at all. For Ben, he actually did. Like, he rolled over, he sat up at the appropriate time, but not much after that. He never crawled, never babbled, things like that. There's, you know, a space and time where he's still within the normal range. And so you're like, okay, well, maybe he's just going to be late and he'll get it. There's that point where it's okay, now we're starting to worry. So around the time that he was almost a year old, he wasn't quite a year old yet, but he was almost a year when we started really looking at, he's really not meeting these milestones at all, not even close. I remember as a baby, he wouldn't even put weight on his legs. I just had to hold him. We got him into early intervention and they came over and did a test on him to see if he qualified for early intervention. And they're like, yes, 100% across the board, he qualifies for early intervention. And so that was kind of the first step. And then we also got a little more serious. I mean, the pediatricians were watching and monitoring his progress. For the most part, we hadn't really pushed a lot there. And so that was kind of the turning point. And like, okay, we're in early intervention. We really need to start looking into what's going on with him. And so at that point, the pediatrician we had was amazing, kind of a little bit annoying, the fact that she was so amazing. She was very overzealous. Like, she sent us to every single specialist that we were getting exhausted because we had so many different doctors to visit and go see and keep track of. Every single specialist we saw basically gave us nothing. I remember seeing ortho and all they told us was like, he had a little bit of low muscle tone in his legs. And so that was about it. And the other big marker that he had as a young child was that his eyes were misaligned. That was like the one thing that people could agree on. Yeah, his eyes are misaligned, which I learned later is actually a very common thing with Angelman syndrome. A lot of kids have misaligned eyes. Those were the two things we had. And eventually our pediatrician was like, well, the last thing we can try is we can try this genome sequencing. We'll just do a cheek swab. I'll send it in to a company called Lineagen, which does genetic testing. And even our pediatrician at the time kind of told us, she's like, it's really unlikely that this is going to come back with any sort of results. It's going to come back normal. It almost always does, but it's our last stitch effort. You know, like this is the last thing to try. And so we did that. Maybe 3 to 4 months later, we got an email from Lineagen directly. I mentioned him as a year old, but this spanned, he was almost 3 at this point when we finally got the results.
And so at 3, was he walking?
No. Yes, actually. So we, because of his misaligned eyes, sorry, I'm not a very good storyteller. So he had misaligned eyes and we got him bilateral eye surgery. And like 2 weeks after that surgery, he started walking for the first time independently. And so he was still very, very much lacking in balance, and a lot of gross motor control in general was just struggling, but he took his first steps and that was amazing. I remember we were both so excited and crying and it was such a good day. And that was also about maybe a month or so after I had my second son. So I was like, yay, I'm so glad I have one walker.
So tell me exactly what Angelman syndrome is.
Okay, so Angelman syndrome is, it's a missing gene on the 15th chromosome. And there's several different types of Angelman syndrome, but that's at its simplest what it means. So you're missing this UBE3A gene, which you need that gene because it creates a specific protein that our bodies need in order for our brain to make certain connections. So without that protein, our bodies really struggle throughout our whole nervous system and getting those signals from our brain to the rest of our body to get it to move, to get it to talk. With Angelman syndrome, there is, like I mentioned, a lot of motor control issues. With my son, there's a lot of impulse control.
What does that mean?
When he sees something that he wants, he'll just go for it. You know, he grabs it. So that could be a really cute girl's hair that's sitting in front of him, or, you know, and me being his mom and having known him for so many years at this point, I can see that he doesn't necessarily want to do these things. He doesn't want to disobey. He doesn't want to hurt somebody, but he kind of can't help himself sometimes. So he might like smack someone on the arm as he's walking down the hallway or grab their hair. So that's kind of where the impulse control comes in for him. A huge marker for Angelman syndrome is a lack of verbal communication. So he has excellent receptive communication skills. He can understand quite a bit, and you can tell that he understands, but he lacks that expressive communication where he can communicate that I know what you're talking about. I can ask you questions. You know, he can't do that sort of thing.
And Angelman syndrome, that's something where he won't ever be able to live on his own, right?
At this point, no. Yeah, he will always need 24/7 care, whether that's with us or a caregiver or something, that's what we're looking at. Another big thing with Angelman syndrome is about 90% of kids with Angelman syndrome also suffer from epilepsy. So that's a big thing. And we've been really fortunate that Ben doesn't. So Ben has not yet, and hopefully won't ever, he has not had a seizure to date. So though we have been monitoring that. So we have regular kind of EEGs that we make sure that he's doing good. So.
Okay. So once you got the diagnosis, how was that period for you and your husband?
So for us, it was actually this light at the end of this really confusing dark tunnel of no answers. So for us, it was a really exciting, still kind of scary and sad, you know, there's mixed emotions, and it was bittersweet because we still had to put all these thoughts of what we put into his future away, you know. We had to grieve that sort of future for him. And figure out what this meant for who he is, who he really is in the present, and what that looks like and how we're going to move forward. But in general, it was really exciting. We finally had a name for what he had. It wasn't just this global developmental delay, and we were able to find community groups online or in person, and we were able to get resources available now because we had a name for what he had.
And it's very rare. Is that right? Is that why it's so hard to find a diagnosis?
Yeah, it is rare. So it's about one. The numbers kind of vary because there's a lot of misdiagnoses out there, but there's one in 15,000 to one in 20,000 is kind of the range that of this rarity. But it also can get misdiagnosed. So often it's misdiagnosed for autism or even sometimes cerebral palsy. So,
gotcha. What are the challenges of parenting a child with this disability? What do you wish other parents knew about the challenges you face parenting a child with a disability?
So in our specific case, the biggest challenges that I have are that it's just really hard to take him places. Like, he gets into everything. Like, our entire house is childproofed, and we call it Ben-proofed because it's beyond childproofed. We have locks on everything. Like, just everything is super safe. And so it's really hard to go into someone else's house who for a play date or something. And, you know, they think their house is childproof and ready for kids. And it's really, and it may very well be, but it's not been proofed. I can never relax when I'm at someone else's house. I'm constantly chasing him and running around and making sure he's not destroying and getting into everything in their fridge and closet. And that's a big thing. And I mean, even just going out to the grocery store, it's really hard because especially as he gets bigger, he's heavier, but he still very much needs a lot of assistance. And he's getting to the age and point where he wants to sometimes be defiant when he wants, like, no, mom, I don't want to go with you right now. I'm going to sit here on the floor and just wait until I'm good and ready to go. So things like that are hard to just navigate, friends and relationships and also the public. And so that's probably what I'd say is the biggest challenge.
Twins is not the same, but twins is challenging. And I felt like I lost a lot of friendships when my twins came because we were, you know, too much for people. Then they got older and it's different now. But when they were little, I did lose some friends, and I don't think it was intentionally, but it was just too much for people. But what do you wish you could tell your friends to be able to support you? Because I don't think my friends, I think they liked me, you know, but they didn't know how to help me, and I didn't know how to ask for help. So how could your friends help you, or what do you wish they knew?
I think that it's hard because I still very much feel what you just described. It's like, I don't always know how to ask for help or what help I need. I just know there are moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so frustrated. I just don't even know how to handle this situation right now. And honestly, the moments that have lifted me the most, like when I'm in public or something, are moments where just another mom sees me and that struggle. And she's like, oh my gosh, you have the cutest kids, or like, oh, they're so well behaved or something, you know, like just something random, like some nice compliment, you know. And I'm like, oh, thank you for seeing my family as a whole and not just seeing like, oh, I have this disabled kid running around being crazy, you know, or something. And it's so encouraging to me to just feel like my situation isn't abnormal. Like, every mom struggles with something. And honestly, even I remember making some comments to other moms, like, oh my gosh, I don't even remember what it was at this time, but I remember saying like, oh my gosh, it's so difficult. I have to deal with this, you know? And I remember a few times with different conversations, the person I'm talking to will be like, oh, well, I deal with that too. Like, that, you know, that's a mom thing, not a special needs mom thing, you know? And it kind of humbled me. I was like, oh, good. Like, you're right. That's nice to hear. It's kind of nice sometimes to hear this isn't just a me thing, because it can feel that way a lot of the times. It feels very lonely and very isolating. And there are times where, to contrast out, there are times where I'm having conversations with other moms and they're talking about something as simple as, man, it's so nice that it's summertime and I can send my kids out to the park and just let them play and just they can come home whenever, or they can wander the neighborhood or something. And I'm just like, I literally don't know what that's like. Like, I cannot relate to you in that way because my oldest is not there. Like, I just don't know what that's like. So it's nice to get little moments where I feel like I can relate or I'm not this abnormality in the mom world.
And how does Ben relate to his peers?
I always say Ben is the most social, nonverbal kid you could ever meet. Like, he loves people and he will very gladly come to like a new person. He'll come sit on your lap and give you hugs and tilt his head towards you because he wants more hugs or kisses or something. He just absolutely loves people and is just such the like purest little person. I don't know why I got so lucky to have this little loving being, but he is the sweetest. It's hard sometimes because I can see that he wants to interact with people so much, but there's obviously that communication barrier between them. And in his case, like we're growing, we're working on that skill because he has a communication device. So he has a talker that he uses.
Tell me about that. I've seen it, but it is super neat. It's like a spell. It reminds me of like a 1980s toy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, and I actually have it right here. I can put together a little message real quick just to hear it. So the general term for like any sort of communication device or really anything that helps someone with a disability interact better with their world and environment is called an AAC device for communication specifically. But so, and that stands for augmentative and alternative communication is what AAC stands for. And so his device right now, we use an iPad with a system called Snap.
Okay, and I'm thinking of something different.
He did have a book at one point. So it looks, okay. I mean, the listeners can't see it, but it's basically a system that just has a bunch of symbols on it. It's funny, the other day we were at church and he pointed to the door and he pressed the go button and he said, go, 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 go. And I said, we need to wait. Like the meeting hasn't even started yet. And then he went back to his system and said, fast. Like, go, 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 fast.
Fast.
So.
Go, go, fast.
So he can create a little message on there and talk to his friends. He has this available to him at home all the time. And definitely when we go out in public, he has a little harness. He wears it on his chest. And so if he ever wants to make a message and communicate with someone, he can. He's still getting, you know, working on it and learning how to use his device, but it really opens the door for a lot. I try not to push him to make any messages. It's just if he wants to, it's there for him.
How is he treated by his peers? And what do you wish kids his age knew about Ben?
So it's very obvious to me when he's interacting with kids, which families have done the work to teach their kids about other kids with differences, you know, just differences in general, because he does get a lot of like, ew, he drooled on his hand. I don't want to touch him, you know, and which I totally understand. I don't necessarily like touching drooly hands either, but then you get some kids who like purposely like go out of their way to come up to him and they're like, oh, hi, Ben, how are you doing? Can I have a high five? You know, and they genuinely want to interact with him and want to be his friend. I remember in the last area we lived, oh my gosh, like anytime he walked in the room, like the whole room, all the kids would say, hi, Ben, come sit by me. And so it's just like, for me as mom, that's like the best. Of course, like what mom doesn't want their kids to have some friends and have people who enjoy seeing their kid, you know? It's definitely a learning curve with a lot of kids. And I feel like his same age peers are usually not as great as like maybe 1 or 2 years older. the older kids, I think, are just more, they've seen a few more things, you know, than the kids his age. And so they're a little more like, oh yeah, Ben's cool. You know, that's fine. But his own peers are like, what is this? Something's going on. It's different than what I'm used to. But in general, the kids are good with Ben, and he likes being around them. And for me, I'm lucky because at least like at church, I get to be with the kids and see kind of how they interact, and they get to see how I interact with Ben. And so that's a huge thing. That's a huge thing for me as his mom. This is the biggest thing I think other parents can do, is when you see someone who is neurodivergent, is kind of what it's called. So when you see someone like that, who is doing something different, maybe they, in order to listen, they need to wander around the room, or they need to fidget with something, or, you know, they're just doing something a little out of the normal, treat it like it's normal. So for me, if Ben comes up, I used to sometimes just let him wander around the room while I'm teaching something, and it became normal. Like the first maybe few times it happened, some of the kids who didn't know him very well yet were like, what is going on? He's not in his seat, you know? And then after a while, as I said, it's normal. And if Ben passed in front of me, I'd just say, hey, Ben, how's it going? You know, and just it, that's what he's doing. It's not a big deal. I'm not going to yell at him to go sit down. The kids totally pick up on that, and they respond in kind. They follow my example and what I'm modeling. And that, I think, is the biggest help as, you know, adults. What we can do is just model the proper behavior.
We don't have, their public school does not have any special need classrooms at their school. My kids are not exposed to a lot of people who are different than they are. So when we do see someone who is different, maybe at the grocery store, they point and they ask questions. And I don't ever really know what to say. Sometimes I say, oh, well, isn't that nice? We're all different, you know, or mom, what's wrong with that person? And I just answer honestly. I'm like, I don't know, but it isn't nice that people are different. But maybe that is offensive, and I know that they can hear me because my kid just said it right in front of the other person. So how can I teach my kids to see the differences? I mean, you can't ignore a difference, see a difference, but be respectful.
I think what you've been telling your kids is a good place to start. Because for me, like, I hear that sometimes, definitely when I'm out in public, like, why are they doing that? You know, or what I get a lot is kids coming up to Ben because he uses a binky. He really has that set, like, oral fixation. He needs some help there. And so a lot of kids will come up, oh, like, he's not a baby. Why does he have a binky? So things like that. And honestly, like, kids coming up to me asking questions or even overhearing questions that they ask, it makes me smile. It does not offend me whatsoever if some kid says some super loud comment to their parent. You know, I do pay attention and listen to what the parents say. And so for me, I love the answer, you know, oh, they're just, you know, people are different. Everyone's a little different. I remember my niece saying, I was overhearing a conversation of her answering some kid questions, like, what's wrong with him? Or, you know, something like that. And, or, you know what, actually it was, what is Angelman syndrome? And she said, well, Angelman syndrome just means that his body works differently than ours does. And I was like, that's so perfect. That's exactly right. His body is just different than ours. And it was just the perfect kid answer. And I think as parents answering that question, and I'm going to pick apart one of the phrases you used, is what's wrong with him? That is a question or a phrase that's worded exactly like that. What's wrong with him? Kids say it, adults say it. And it's a sore spot sometimes for a lot of parents. Not everyone gets offended, but it is a sore spot because for me as Ben's mom, I don't think anything's wrong with my son. You know, there's kind of this medical model of disability, and then there's the social model, you know. And for me, obviously, I understand that there's a genetic abnormality with my son. I understand that. But for me, the connotation of wrong is on the level of like morals, you know, right and wrong, and like pureness and not pure, you know, and like, and for me, I'm like, there is zero things wrong with my son. My son is nothing but right. He is all the good in this world. He is so awesome. He's just so good. So for me, if someone were to ask me that, I would not, of course, not be offended, because I know that they just don't have the right wording. They just don't have the right tools, you know? And so I would probably respond and just say, you know what? Nothing's wrong with him, but he does have Angelman syndrome, you know, or he does have a hard time with his motor skills and with talking. He can't use any verbal communication. So that's usually how I would answer the question if somebody asked me that. But I really think the answers that you shared with your kids are right on track. I think those are great answers. And I think just the more, just in general, even if you're not exposed to a lot of people with disabilities in your community, having conversations, whether it's showing videos or even just reading books about people who are different than them, are a great way to have that conversation and to kind of open your kids' minds. I constantly fill my little tiny bookshelves of my kids with books about all sorts of differences and being inclusive. And I love it. I love those books.
Okay. You'll have to send me a list, because
I will.
I think the best way, I think, to teach a kid is through books, because I don't always have the experiences. I don't always have the right words. But if we're reading a book, it can definitely open up conversations. And even if the point of the book was not something, you can still point things out in the story. Even if it's just like, hey, that was really rude. My dad hates Berenstain Bear books because the dad is always blamed for stuff. And so he would read them backwards and change Mama Bear and Papa Bear. And I'd be like, why is there a picture of the dad, though? And you're saying Mama Bear, because he hated that the dad was always made out to be a fool in the books. Anyway, so he taught me through flipping the words around in the book that he didn't like that, you know, not all dads are dumb and foolish or whatever. So tell me, one of the things that you've taught me a ton about is public education and special education when it comes to public schools.
Yeah.
So go ahead, get on your soapbox and you tell me all the things.
So I could go on and on about this. So Ben, unfortunately, right now is – I'll cut out the unfortunately, but Ben currently is in what's called a self-contained special education classroom. And what that means is that he is in a class where the only other students in the class are all in the special education program. They all have some sort of disability of varying levels. Usually a self-contained class contains the more severe disabilities. Why I originally said unfortunately is because it's not a placement that I want him to be at. What I have found in studying inclusion and the effects of inclusion on students with disabilities is like nearly 100% of the studies I've found, I haven't found any that are contrary to this, is that in every case, students with disabilities who are included in the general education classrooms and setting, 100% of the time, they show academic advancement as well as social emotional advancement when they are included in the general education setting.
Which makes sense.
Yes. So,
but then the flip of the coin is, what about the other kids?
Exactly. And that's always the next question is like, okay, well, how's that going to impact my student who is not disabled? And so what the studies have found is that students who are neurotypical show as well an increase. They also show improvement in their studies, or they show no impact. So really, like, and that's the truth. So some studies show that there's really no impact to them. There's no benefit really, but there's no disadvantage or like there's no downside.
Hindrance.
Yes, hindrance, yeah. Thanks. So for me, obviously, like, how can I not, when I know that that's on the line, not want that for my son? You know, I want him to be around his typical peers. I want him to have access to the full robust education that all of his peers are getting. Whereas right now,
I mean, last year kind of threw things out of whack because I pulled him out and homeschooled him. But prior to that, he was on his maybe third or fourth year of just focusing on the ABCs, you know, and identifying letters, which I've been working on with him since birth. So I'm like, I know he knows his letters. He just lacks expressive communication to confirm that to you. So let's move on. Let's teach him some science experiments. Let's go into some other topics.
Are you planning on continuing to homeschool him then? Or is that just a COVID homeschool?
That was a COVID thing. I did enjoy it, but he is such a social person that he really, really wanted to be back at school. Like the first while of being home from COVID, he would bring me his backpack and go to the door and knock on the door because he wanted to leave. He wanted to go to school. So with special education, it's really hard, especially being here in Utah, because we were up in Salt Lake and there it's still behind the times. They still don't have the best program going on and set up. But I feel like when we moved to where we are now, we took an even further step back in progressivity, whatever. I don't even know if that's a word.
Sounds good to me.
But because not only here do they segregate the kids who have disabilities, but they segregate them by their disability. So it's not just neurotypical versus disabled. It's also, okay, now we have a class that's like just for kids with autism. And then we have a class for just, you know, all the kids we really don't know how to handle. They need more support, you know? So they kind of like sift them off into these different categories based on what their diagnosis is almost. And so that's been really hard for me to kind of combat. So I'm still working on it. It's a work in progress. And over the years, I've been able to find, you know, all I need is one educator who can see my vision, who can help back me up, and I can roll with it. I usually have been able to find at least one or two in my IEP meetings who are willing to like, yeah, let's try it. Let's see, let's stick them in the general ed classroom, even for small amounts of time. Let's go for it. And like, what's it gonna hurt? And so that's kind of what I keep pushing for.
This episode brought to you by the Baby Burp Shop. It's a shop on Etsy that sells my very favorite burp cloth, along with pre-made gift boxes to send to a friend. These burp cloths are the best. They're large 24 inches by 10.5 inches. They're soft, comfy, durable, absorbent, and they wash up well. They're like that muslin material, so it's really soft when you're using it to wipe up a baby's face. I had more than one kid with acid reflux, and I felt like I was always carrying around like a beach towel to catch all the spit up. But once I discovered these burp cloths, that's all I used. I'd wash them, and then I'd use those same burp cloths. They can fit over your shoulder or over your lap if you like to burp that way. It also has a snap on it, so then you can use the burp cloth as a bib around your kid's neck. Use the link in the show notes and use code TWIN15 and you'll receive 15% off your order. And while you're there, get a gift box for your friend, your neighbor, your coworker, your cousin. You can choose a handcrafted stuffed animal, a sweet little elephant or lion. The lion is actually a rattle, a pacifier clip, a handcrafted hair bow, or a little bow tie. The hair bows are sailor bows, are so cute. Shipping is always free, and your friend will appreciate the thoughtful gift that you didn't even have to prepare. So head to the show notes or find the link on my website, neighborhoodtwinmom.com, and save 15% off with promo code TWIN15 at checkout.
So to kind of continue on special education, another common kind of argument for not including disabled students is often funding. Funding is a big thing. They say, well, the teachers are already, you know, not getting their pay that they should, and there's so many limited resources. And I totally 100% agree with that. I will say, I don't know how much money it is, but I do know that every student with an IEP, the fact that they're at that school with an IEP, the school gets funding for those students. Again, I don't know exactly what the amount is, but there is some money for me sending my kid to school that the school is receiving. So there's at least a little wiggle room. And I've never asked the school for anything. There are options for parents to go through the school to get a communication device or to get you know, sensory items added to their classroom, things like that. And I've never pushed for that or asked for that. I provide it to the schools, you know, so at least in some cases, and most parents don't even know that they can ask for those things. I didn't know for years. That's one little thing that some people don't know, that there is some funding going on when there's disabled kids in the school. I'm not an educator. I don't teach in the schools, but I have taught youth and children in a church setting for many years, and I do it without any funding. And I provide a lot of things out of my own pockets. It's a volunteer position, but there are so many ways to be creative when you are teaching students that don't have to cost a lot of money. You don't have to spend money to include someone in a room. And the biggest thing that I tell people is, my son is in a classroom with special educators who have gone to college to deal with people who have disabilities. Like, that's what their expertise is in. It's not my expertise. My expertise is my son, you know. So I find it odd that my son is included at home. He's included with my extended family. And I will say I know that some special needs families don't always have family support. We do. So that is something. But he's included with family. He's included at church. He's included when we go to the park. So he's included everywhere, except in the one place that there are people who have been trained to work with him. To me, it's so backwards that that's the one place that he's not included. And so that is definitely, for me, I have learned over the years that the more we set our environments up to include children or individuals with disabilities, the more that everyone in the room benefits. There are so many different types of learners in any classroom. Who is not going to benefit by having some visual aids in the classroom on the wall to help with a schedule? Who is not going to help? Who's not going to be benefited by maybe having a few little sensory items in the corner of the room in case a kid needs to have a break for a second? Who's not going to benefit if there is, in addition to the normal classroom instruction, maybe there's transcription or recording that the kids can take home to process it more as they go throughout the day? You know, there's just so many different things that can come into play that don't need to take a lot of funding, but can still benefit everyone as a whole and make everyone in the classroom get lifted together.
We don't live in the same state, so we don't frequent the park together. But what's one thing that I can do to help my friends who have children with disabilities? Because I do look out for them now and I do notice more. So what can I do for them? Like my friends who are parenting children with a disability.
What can you do for your friends? Like, in, you said at the park?
Or no, I just mean like you and I are not hanging out at the park. We don't live close to each other.
I gotcha. Okay.
But I do have friends who have kids with a disability. So what is something that I can do, something actionable that I could do for them?
Honestly, the one thing that I hear the most from parents with disabilities and that I feel myself the most is just that isolated feeling like I don't relate to other parents, feeling that I'm alone in this fight, you know, or whatever, and just feeling like I don't have a good friend, you know. And so for me, just having someone who doesn't really care if they can't relate to me, like, and just letting me share my experience, you know, and you are right now, like, and that's nice. For me, it's just like, invite them. Like, sometimes we can't come, you know, we can't come to things, but getting an invitation is like, oh, someone likes me. Someone wants to be my friend. I can't go, but it's so nice that they like me, that it can give someone a little boost.
All right. Here's a follow-up. So you say same thing with twins. Like, people would invite me to things. I'm like, my bandwidth will not allow me to attend that event, but thank you for the invitation. So what, and of course it would depend on the day and the time. So how would you want another adult to approach you and basically ask, like, can we hang out? What do you need me to do to hang out? Like, how can somebody approach you? You don't seem to get very offended by things, but I wouldn't know how to say to someone, would you like to come to my house, or can we hang out? But like, what do I need to do so we can hang out? don't know.
Honestly, like, that is a perfect question. So, and I actually have had a friend who has become a very good friend to me just by kind of being blunt like that. She doesn't always know the right wording to say something that's not going to offend. And so she'll just say it. She just says, you know what, like, I don't know how to say this, but I'm going to ask, like, how can I hang out and make my home comfortable? Like, I want my home to be comfortable when you come over. Like, she's literally just asked me that. And I told her, I was like, I don't really expect you to do this. These are the things that would be nice, but you don't have to. I probably just won't come hang out at your house. You can come hang out at mine. So, yeah. And just that simple question tells me, like, okay, there's someone out there who likes me enough that they want me in their home and want to put in the effort to be my friend and just don't know how. And so for me, like, that's a huge thing. Just knowing that someone's out there thinking highly of me, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I can get through one more day. So, but yeah, I've had some women who are brave enough to kind of ask me unpolished questions. And honestly, I haven't met very many other parents who would be offended by that. So I would say just kind of be brave and ask your any unpolished questions you have, because any parent who does feel some sort of way about a question will probably let you know pretty quick how they felt about it. But they'll be, I can't imagine anyone knowing your intent and understanding that you are trying to be a friend and sincere and want to make an effort. I just can't imagine anyone turning that away and being defensive.
Awesome. Kendra, thank you so much for all of your words of wisdom. Do you have anything else you wanted to say before we stop?
If I could add, just with the discussion on Angelman syndrome, I would love if anyone feels the pull to donate any funds that the great Angelman nonprofit is the Angelman Syndrome Foundation. And I know that they do so much good work for families with Angelman syndrome. And they just recently created a fund for mental health that I absolutely love. So they fund mental health sessions for families, anyone in the family who has, you know, is a caregiver or a sibling or a parent to a child with Angelman syndrome. And so they are an awesome organization if anyone would like to donate.
That's awesome. Okay. We will link that organization in the show notes so you can learn more about the Angelman syndrome and the foundation. All right, Kendra, thank you so much for the interview.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time. Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you want to hang out some more, you can follow me on Instagram at Neighborhood Twin Mom. If you want more info on what we talked about in this episode or a transcription of the audio, head to neighborhoodtwinmom.com. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star rating and review. This helps other people be able to find the podcast. Music for this episode was composed by Cameron Norby. Find more of his work on YouTube.